Welcome to another powerful word from Pastor Ron Hammonds, Senior Pastor of Golden Triangle Church on the Rock in Southeast Texas. We're so glad you're joining us. For more information about Golden Triangle Church on the Rock Ministries, visit our website, cotr.com. Enjoy the word.
This coming Sunday morning, as we celebrate the resurrection, there is no doubt we will be simply talking about some of the things that took place on that resurrection day. We are here on a Wednesday evening, just a few days from our historical perspective of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ prior to this Sunday, us celebrating his resurrection. We in the Western Church imagine this to be that Holy Week that Jesus, rode into Jerusalem on that little donkey, and then he shared in the temple, he cleansed the temple, he taught and shared parables, and all being ready for that moment whenever he would be asked to give his life as a ransom. And as we're approaching that tonight, I just want to share something that you may not realize is a real parallel. Maybe you can lay some things in your life over what we'll talk about tonight. But I would like for us to understand that it was a real world that Jesus lived in. And Jesus, after they had the Passover, the Last Supper, then he went out to the Garden of Gethsemane, and there he prayed. If this be your will, God, then okay. But if this is not your will, Lord, and there's some other way, then please, Lord, show me another way. But embracing it to be the will of God that he submit his life to be arrested, he didn't have to. The Bible tells us he could have called 10,000 angels. They would have stepped in. But realizing that it was time for him to sacrifice his life, and it was time for him to submit to not only what the Father wanted, but also what many other people wanted. I've asked myself the question before, was it God's will or the devil's will that Jesus be crucified? Well, it was both of them. Both of them wanted the same thing. Isn't that interesting? That both God and this world and the prince of this world at that moment were looking forward to the same thing. One of them because they thought it would get rid of Jesus, and the other one because they knew that it would allow the forgiveness of sins and the embracing by God of reconciled man at the salvation of souls and the raising up of witnesses to go into all the world with the power of the Holy Spirit, with the Word of God, and to see more people reached and touched and fed and clothed and, and helped, encouraged with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Wow. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about the trial of Jesus. Now, while I was studying for this earlier in the week, I ran across a quote that was a quote from the third president of the United States. And this president, you all know him, Thomas Jefferson. He also was, primarily responsible for, the putting together of the Declaration of Independence in 1776. And he was also instrumental in forming and framing the Constitution, as was Madison and many others, as well as the Bill of Rights. But Thomas Jefferson said this, and I'm going to just give you this quote. I thought it was an interesting quote. I will quote this, and then we won't really make comment on it further. But he said this: "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants." Interesting. The Western Church will celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ this coming Sunday. And we all know that before there could be a resurrection, there had to be a death, right? And we don't often get an opportunity to really teach on what happened leading up to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, partly because it's a little bit, lengthy and a little bit, I don't know, you can get lost in it. You know, for fun, I listen to the Supreme Court arguments. I mean, this is what I do in my off time by myself when I'm, you know, going somewhere, or when I'm sitting at home, or in the evening whenever I've quieted down. You know, you can listen to the Supreme Court ask their questions and review different cases. You can't watch them, but you can listen to them. And I enjoy listening to things. And so I listen to court cases. I just like them. I enjoy them. I'll go back in history and listen to some. But it is rather, if you don't have this inclination, it can rather be boring. It can really be boring. It can really be redundant. And you can lose. You can lose yourself, because many times questions are asked and then they're re-asked and they're asked in another way and they're answered in a way that you're thinking, oh my goodness, that was not the answer. And then they're asked again, and you know, it can really be, it's intriguing. I love it. It's like, a hound dog on the trail of a squirrel, you know, I mean, running around, just trying to find out where is this going to lead. Well, that's the way the trial of Jesus could be. So let me lay it out for you a little bit in today's language. You know, many times when we look back into the Bible, we don't really see these people as people, but in reality, they were, and they faced the very same things that we face today. The Word of God covers the same issues with us as it covered with Moses, as it covered with Jonah, as it covered with Jeremiah and David and all the prophets, and as it covered in the New Testament. Life happens and unfolds the same way with everyone. The situations that you're facing or the situations that we are facing are not new situations. There's nothing new under the sun. You know, all of the questions that you might have might be new questions for you, but all of the answers are going to be the same. The Word of God provides the answers, and the Bible just tells the same story over and over and over again. And so if you're ever confused with what the Bible is trying to say, just go back to a story that you do know and lay it on top of the one that you don't know, and you can probably figure out that God is trying His best to help people. He's trying His best to redeem people. He's trying to show us how we should think, how we should do, and many times He shows it in the lives of people who are not doing what they should have done, and then he shows us the outcome of behaviors unpleasing to Him, and then He shows us what we can do. So without getting too deep into that thought, the death on the cross, the death of Jesus Christ on that cross of Calvary, provided the perfect sacrifice for all sin forever, but it happened in a very legal manner. The political leadership of the day were known as the Pharisees, and that's what they were. They were a religiously motivated political party. Pharisees, Sadducees, we don't recognize them that way, but that's what they had. Certain tenets and certain platforms. They had certain beliefs. The Pharisees believed in the resurrection. They believed in angels. They believed in spirits. They believed in life after death. The Sadducees did not. They did not believe in angels. They did not believe in the resurrection. And there were other minor political parties that all came together to form the nation state of Israel. And they had systems of administration and systems of courts. The Sanhedrin was a court that people were brought into and judged at what we might call a state level. Okay, but yet they were still governed by a federal government, as we would understand it today, by the Roman government. And the Roman government had different districts and different provinces, so that Pilate was in charge of one area and Herod was in charge of another area. So there were different districts and district courts, as it were, administrators and governments that had authority over people that were under them in their district, in their region, in their area, in their state, in their city. It was just a form of government. But the basic state state government of Israel in that day was a religious state government. And so the laws of Moses were supreme laws at the state level. Okay? Does that make any sense at all? Okay? And that's why we see the Pharisees arguing with their lawyers, which the Apostle Paul, formerly Saul of Tarsus, was an attorney of the law of Moses. He studied the law so that he could argue cases before the state court of Israel, and he would incarcerate people and put them into prison for breaking one of the laws of Moses, breaking one of the laws that were put together by the state, which might be a law that says that you cannot work on Sunday, or excuse me, on Saturday, on the Sabbath, or it might be a law that says that if you follow Jesus and if you think he's the Son of God, well, we now have an executive order saying that anyone who is of this way can be put to death, can be put in prison. Your stuff can be confiscated. You can lose your home. You can lose your job. You can lose all of your property. And that was the penalty. All these things were written down and followed just like they would be today if we were under some religious rule or order. We are not. We are under secular rule, and our secular laws govern us at a local level, at a state level, at a federal level. So get this in your mind that it's basically the very same thing. And we can look at the Pharisees, who were in power, as one of the political parties that happened to be in a very strong power at the time, and they dominated the state laws and the state courts. Okay? Do you have that picture? If you will, you can realize that Jesus was considered a trophy to the Pharisees if they could trick him and trap him, take something that he said, twist his words, and get him into a court for having broken the law. That's why they would say, "Ooh, you're not supposed to, have your disciples work on Sunday. You're not supposed to heal, on Saturday. You're not supposed to heal on the Sabbath. It's work." And they were always, testing him. They were trying to find something that they could accuse him of, something that was big, something that was worthy some law. They didn't want to get him for jaywalking, okay? They wanted to get him for murder. They wanted to get him for something that was so big that it carried the death penalty. They didn't want to just get him in a court of working on Saturday, healing on the Sabbath. They wanted something big. So they were always trying to trick him and trap him, trying to get him to make a public statement so they could use it in evidence against him. You see this all throughout the Bible. And when you read the New Testament, you read the Gospels, read it in this way. Anytime Jesus comes up against the scribes, the Pharisees, the lawyers he talks about, who were hypocrites that were trying, not all of them were hypocrites, but the ones trying to trick him were hypocrites, in that what they were trying to accuse him, they were doing themselves. And he makes this very plain. But the leadership, the political leadership in power in that day, they really considered Jesus as a trophy. And they thought that his death would really be a victory for them, a big win. One of the reasons was, many theologians believe, one of the reasons was, is because he would not join their party. He would not support their platform. Okay. If he had, they would have been very happy, very excited if he had have just joined. But he didn't belong to any party, so he was, he was kind of out here by himself. He was an independent, the ultimate independent, huh? The Pharisees and the state court of Israel really felt like that the crucifixion of Jesus was a testimony to their power. It was uh, it 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 was evidence that they were masterful, that they were genius, that their strategy worked, and they got this guy off the scene. And so they really believed that it was evidence that they were in charge and they had the power of the people behind them. And it also, that gave them evidence, of course, that they were right. Sometimes when you win, you think you're right. Sometimes when you think you win, you think you're right. Right? Well, I've gone over and over the proceedings of the court and the strategies of the state in the prosecution here of Jesus in the trial that he had. And, you know, he was brought up on what are trumped up charges. They were just literally made up. You know, hearsay, circumstantial evidence. If you'll read it in this manner, it can really surprise you at how parallel this would be if you had been there. And, you know, the evidence that was presented in the court, you can see the evidence they put forth. You can see that there were motions to dismiss. Interesting, huh? Isn't that interesting, Gene, that the judge entertained motions to dismiss, to acquit? You know, we'll read about that in just a moment. There was the willingness of the Roman court to pardon him due to lack of evidence. That's what the Pilate said and Herod said. Due to lack of evidence, we need to let this guy go. We need to release him. There were arguments of the state. The state was wanting the federal system to levy some very excessive punishment. Because, you know, the higher court kept saying, we don't find evidence to support what you're wanting to do. We don't see anything worthy of death. You know, we just see small matters that you are arguing over. There was, a threat of appeal. You know, if you don't do this, we know we'll go higher kind of thing. If they didn't get the sentence they'd requested, all of these things were overwhelming. And the state really left no time for any appeal. Did you notice that? As soon as the sentence happened, they took him right out. Boom. The prosecution really stepped up. Because it couldn't find really any evidence. So the prosecution really stepped up. And what the prosecution did is they paid influencers. You know what influencers are? Influencers are the social media of the day. Okay? Meant to influence and to control public opinion. Now, today we have all kinds of social media. And by the way, if you allow social media to be your truth, you're going to be like one of those who is believing the people who were hired to go out into the crowd and influence, crucify him, crucify him, release Barabbas. And these were people crying out. They were paid. They're paid today. Influencers are paid. They're paid to cry out. It was a crier in that day that went out publicly crying what the people who paid him wanted him to cry. Just like today, you know, opinions are put out by people who are still paying. They're paying. So be very careful about the public cry and the influencers, about believing them, no matter how many they are, no matter how loud they are, no matter, believe me, they are being paid to influence you to believe a narrative that may or may not be true. It wasn't about Jesus. You know, the public cry became so inflamed with crucify him and release Barabbas that the highest court in the land, in order to make peace and ensure peace, and in order to not allow these riots to get out of control and to destroy the order of the city and not, and be blamed for the riots, which would really have happened if Jesus had been acquitted, the higher court changed their mind and decided we cannot acquit this man. We are going to have to cave in to the demands of the states. And so they sentenced Jesus to death. According to public will, the will of the people. Right? This is some pretty good stuff. Right? You see, that's what the state wanted. The state wanted nothing short of death. They did not want to exile Jesus. They did not want to just keep him out of politics or keep him out of Jerusalem or out of the major cities. They wanted him gone. They wanted him away with him. Away with him. We want him out of our future. We want him dead. They didn't just want him flogged. Oh, yes, they did. They did want him flogged. They wanted him publicly humiliated. They wanted him disgraced. They wanted to hurt him, and they were happy when people spit on him. But they wanted him dead. It's difficult to imagine leaders of a country being that filled with hate. Hello? It is difficult to imagine that the leaders of any good country like Israel 2,000 years ago, it's hard to imagine that the leadership of any nation could get together and be filled with such hatred that they would pay people to lie in efforts to destroy someone, their reputation, and take their life away. The leaders abandoned their own integrity. They did not want anyone to be more popular than they were. And that's what it was over. It was all about popularity. It was all about control. It was all about who was going to be in charge. Who are the people going to listen to? It was all about, who's going to end up king. So, with those thoughts in mind, let's read a portion of the public record to see what Jesus endured in the courts of his own country. Matthew chapter 26. In Matthew 26, we will pick up with verse number 59. Jesus has been, arrested, and he's been accused, verse 59. I encourage you to go back and read all of it. I'm reading from the New King James Version. Go back and read the whole stories and the accounts in the Gospels. But verse 59 of Matthew 26. Now the chief priest, the elders, and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death. Now the chief priest was like the high court judge of the state. And the elders and all the council, they were people who also were a part of that judicial system that administered the laws, that made them, that approved them, decided which ones they would and would not adjudicate, and provided counsel so that the chief priest could make his decision as to what they wanted to do. And so all of them, they were seeking false testimony against Jesus to put him to death. Now think about this. How in the world did they get to the place where their leadership was willing to compromise their integrity to such a point that they would hire people to bring false testimony against someone who was rising in popularity with the people? Not only rising in popularity, but was doing good and healing and delivering and feeding and loved everybody. Wow. He just wouldn't join their party. And he pointed out that they weren't doing what they were doing for the right reasons. They were doing it for control and power. They loved to have the preeminence among the people. But in verse 60, they sought false testimony to put Jesus, to death, but they found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. They didn't find any that had a big enough complaint to put him to death. And that's what they were looking for. We don't want any small stuff. As I said earlier, we don't want jaywalking stuff. We want something that carries the death penalty. Okay? But they couldn't find anybody to accuse him of anything worthy of the death penalty. So at the last, two false witnesses came forward and said, "This fellow said, Jesus said, this defendant said,
I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest got up. Finally, I've got something. Maybe there's some meat on this bone. Maybe there's something here. Maybe I can make this into something. Maybe we can turn this, you know, something that he said. We can use his words against him. You know, that they haven't been successful in compelling him to testify against himself. And they have tried many times. So they found somebody that finally said something, destroy the temple of God. That sounds like something worthy of the death penalty, doesn't it? And the high priest rose and said to Jesus, do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you? Well, they just could not compel Jesus. They could not make him testify against himself. You know, at one point, Jesus even says, when they said, you know, are you, you know, the Messiah? And he says, well, what difference does it make to you? If I told you I was, would you believe me? I mean, you're not going to believe anything I say anyway. That's what he said to them. Doesn't that sound like someone in the court that's very frustrated with the court, that the court says, you know, well, what do you have to say? I mean, what, are you going to believe me? If I tell you I didn't do it? If I tell you that's not what I meant? If I tell you you're taken completely out of context, if I tell you that you don't know what you're talking about, that you're just looking for a reason to put me to death, that's all you'll be satisfied with, and no matter what I say, you're going to say it ain't so. So why in the world should I say anything? That's what Jesus was saying. And when they couldn't achieve what they wanted to achieve, they couldn't get the verdict they wanted. The Sanhedrin court, as I said, which was the state court, they decided to bump it up and take the case to a higher court. And maybe, you know, the Roman federal system, Pilate, who represented the Roman federal law as it would be in our case, governed the state at that time. He accepted the case. They didn't accept all of them, by the way. He accepted this one. Because it had the backing of the Supreme Court of Israel, you know, at the state level. The state Supreme Court brought it to Pilate, who was the federal court at that time. And so Pilate accepts the case, and he questions Jesus. And after he questions Jesus, Pilate cannot find anything that he's saying, this is an empty case. These are moot points. Nothing here is worthy of death. And so in verse 13 of Luke chapter 23, Luke chapter 23, verse 13, then Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, said to them, you have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, this was an open court, in public, I examined him in front of you, you know, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things of which you accuse him. Don't you know that deflated the prosecution? But it did not detour them. Verse 15, no, and neither did Herod. Herod was over the Galilee. He happened to be in Jerusalem. And so Pilate, in the meantime, had questioned Jesus and sent him over to Herod and said, listen, this guy's from the Galilee. You have some authority over him as well. Maybe you can get something out. Maybe you understand these people. Herod said, no, I don't find anything wrong with him either. And so he went back to Pilate. And Pilate calls the chief priest and says, look, you guys come on in here. Come on into the courtroom. And let me tell you, I can't find anything worthy. And neither could Herod, for I sent you back to him. And indeed, nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. I'm going to give him an acquittal on the things that you've accused him of, and you know, I'll just chastise him. And the chief prosecutor of the state of Israel argued before Pilate that the sentencing was not in keeping with the lower court's decision. And the lower court's finding
he argued, should be upheld by the federal court. And in compliance with the laws of the state, this man, in our judgment, has done something worthy of death. We want him sentenced to death. But Pilate still wanted to at least reduce the sentence. Let's just chastise. Let's just flog him. You know? I mean, that's just not, you know, chapter 23 again, verse 20. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again called out to them. But they shouted, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Okay, there's about to be a riot here. Okay? There's about to be an overwhelming public outcry here. And then Pilate said to the chief priest and the council and the elders and to the court and the prosecutors and to the state, again, verse 22, Pilate said to them a third time, "Why? Why do you want to crucify him? What evil has he done? Come on, give me some evidence. What evil had earlier Jesus would have said that, you know, what are you arresting me for? What sin, what wrong, what crime are you arresting me for? I've been with you," Jesus said. I've been with you for all this time. You'd never, what's going, you know. Pilate now is saying this same thing. "What evil has he done? I have found no reason for death in him. I will therefore, my judgment is, I will lower the sentence that you have asked for, and I'm going to chastise him," which means I'm going to beat him, I'm going to scourge him, I'm going to have him whipped with 39 stripes on his back in public. I will publicly humiliate him for you. But not because I find anything wrong with him, not because I have found something that he has done that's worthy of this, but for you, and to keep the peace and to keep all this down, I'm going to go ahead and chastise him, scourge him, and beat him, and rip flesh from his body, but I am going to release him. Well, I'm going to let him go. Verse 23, they just wouldn't give up. But they insisted, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and the chief priest prevailed. Wow. Never underestimate the power of public opinion and of the party in control and power. To push even the courts against their own best judgments. So Pilate gave the sentence that it should be as they requested. You remembered another account says he washed his hands in front of them and said, "I don't want anything to do with this. You go ahead," verse 25, and he released them. He released to them the one they requested, which was Barabbas, who for rebellion and murder had been thrown into prison. They just overlooked the rebellion and the murder of the other guy and chose him over Jesus. But Pilate delivered Jesus to their will. Wow, what a picture, huh? Well, we know the rest of the story, and we'll hear more about it on Sunday. You know, they took him out immediately and crucified him while they had the government high court on their side. Do this now, now, quickly, now, now, now. Do this before anything changes. Well, our takeaways from the message tonight. Man. By the way, are y'all getting this? Is this making any sense at all? You know? 2,000 years ago. You know? And this wasn't the first time. It happened to Jeremiah. You know, Jeremiah said, they have brought together an assembly of treacherous men
to judge me. They stacked the court on him. Well, our takeaways. Number one, hatred will ensure no one gets a fair hearing. Boy, whenever you have a system that is motivated by hatred, whenever hatred becomes a part of the equation, whenever hatred is a factor, please keep yourself out of hatred. Keep yourself out of your own hatred and out of the hatred of others. Don't believe the hatred of others. Don't let others' hate make you hate. Okay, be very careful. You know, that happened with Jeremiah. It happened with David. He was wrongfully accused at every turn, and it happened with Jesus. You know, we could go on and on, but you know, the people hated so much they hired and they fabricated lies and false testimony and twisting of the words and all these things, creating a public opinion so that people who never would have hated now hate Jesus, want to see him dead. Be very careful, okay? I mean, there was, read the notes that I have here and go to easysermons.com, easysermons.com, or on our app, and you can get the full notes. And I talk about the secret plot, how these men stayed up late at night. It was after midnight when they finally brought Jesus. These men robbed themselves of sleep to stay up and plot a conspiracy to commit murder, hoping that Judas could deliver him into their hands. You know, it was quite, you know, they intimidated witnesses. You know, anybody that would speak up for Jesus was intimidated and under threat of being crucified themselves as a follower. They robbed him of all of his ability to provide witnesses in the defense. They wouldn't have listened to them anyway. They incited public protest and they made personal threats. I mean, it's all in there if you read the accounts. It's amazing how much corruption was in that system in that day. You know, but what do you expect? Jesus lived in a very difficult time. You know, I'm so glad nothing like this could ever happen in America. I'm so glad I live today and not back then. Jesus walked in a difficult day. You know, when the house of God can be made a den of thieves, then how much more should we expect even the courtrooms to be filled with corruption? Where there is no respect for God, there can be no respect for others. Okay, hatred is the worst motivation of all. Please don't allow hatred to rule your life. Please don't allow hatred to make your decisions. Please don't allow hatred to determine your truth. If you allow hate to rule your life, it will ruin your life. My second takeaway is, what do you do when people you are trying to help are killing you? What do you do when people you are trying to help are killing you? Well, you know, isn't that interesting? Jesus died for the very ones that were killing him. Sometimes love demands that we fix something that we did not break. And of course, you know what Jesus said. Jesus said, Father, forgive them. Okay? So, number one, of course, we need to make sure that we love our enemies, and that's not easy, and those that persecute you and spitefully use you, abuse you, okay? Love them. Number two, forgive them. Number three, do the very best you can. That's all that's all you're required to do, the very, very best you can. Love, forgive, and do the best you can. And then the fourth thing is, know when enough is enough. You know, Jesus excused himself from abuse, okay? There was a reason he only wanted to hang around 33 and a half years. I mean, he loved, he paid, he did everything else, but he excused himself from being further, you know, treated that way. It is wrong. I'm going to let you know, I do believe it is wrong to hate people.
it is wrong to not forgive them. Let me encourage you to love people and forgive them. But it is not wrong to excuse yourself from abuse. Please know the difference. Okay? And for goodness sake, don't be an abuser. It's wrong. Don't be involved in motivations to hurt people because you hate people.
Thanks again for joining us for another dynamic message from Pastor Ron Hammonds. Visit COTR.com and subscribe to our social media platforms to stay up to date. As well, receive more encouraging messages from our pastor and details of the work we're doing both in our community and communities like ours around the world. Today and every day, God bless.